me already.
Jace hesitated. He didn't want to hesitate, but there it was, an annoying reluctance to kill anyone lying helpless on the ground in front of him. Jace remembered Valentine taunting him back at Renwick's, daring his son to kill him, and Jace hadn't been able to do it. But Sebastian was a murderer. He'd killed Max and Hodge. He raised the sword, and Sebastian erupted off the ground, faster than the eye could follow. He seemed to fly into the air, performing an elegant backflip and landing gracefully on the grass, barely a foot away. As he did, he kicked out, striking Jace's hand. The kick sent the sword spinning out of Jace's grasp. Sebastian caught it out of the air, laughing, and slashed out with the blade, whipping it toward Jace's heart. Jace leaped backward, and the blade split the air just in front of him, slicing his shirt open down the front. There was a stinging pain, and Jace felt blood welling from a shallow slice across his chest. Sebastian chuckled, advancing toward Jace, who backed up, fumbling his insufficient dagger out of his belt as he went. He looked around, desperately hoping there was something else he could use as a weapon, a long stick, anything. There was nothing around him but the grass, the river running by, and the trees above spreading their thick branches overhead like a green net. Suddenly he remembered the Malachi configuration the Inquisitor had trapped him in. Sebastian wasn't the only one who could jump. Sebastian slashed the sword toward him again, but Jace had already leaped, straight up into the air. The lowest tree branch was about 20 feet high. He caught at it, swinging himself up and over. Kneeling on the branch, he saw Sebastian on the ground spin around and look up. Jace flung the dagger and heard Sebastian shout. Breathless, he straightened up. And Sebastian was suddenly on the branch beside him. His pale face was flushed angrily, his sword arm streaming blood. He had dropped the sword evidently in the grass, though that merely made them even, Jace thought, since his dagger was gone as well. He saw with some satisfaction that for the first time Sebastian looked angry, angry and surprised, as if a pet he'd thought was tame had bitten him. "That was fun," Sebastian said, "but now it's over." He flung himself at Jace, catching him around the waist, knocking him off the branch. They fell 20 feet through the air, clutched together, tearing at each other, and hit the ground hard, hard enough that Jace saw stars behind his eyes. He grabbed for Sebastian's injured arm and dug his fingers in. Sebastian yelled and backhanded Jace across the face. Jace's mouth filled with salty blood. He gagged on it as they rolled through the dirt together, slamming punches into each other. He felt a sudden shock of icy cold. They'd rolled down the slight incline into the river and were lying half in, half out of the water. Sebastian gasped, and Jace took the opportunity to grab for the other boy's throat and close his hands around it, squeezing. Sebastian choked, seizing Jace's right wrist in his hand and jerking it backward, hard enough to snap the bones. Jace heard himself scream as if from a distance, and Sebastian pressed the advantage, twisting the broken wrist mercilessly until Jace let go of him and fell back in the cold, watery mud, his arm a howl of agony. Half kneeling on Jace's chest, one knee digging hard into his ribs, Sebastian grinned down at him. His eyes shone out white and black from a mask of dirt and blood. Something glittered in his right hand, Jace's dagger. He must have picked it up from the ground. Its point rested directly over Jace's heart. "And we find ourselves exactly where we were 5 minutes ago," Sebastian said. "You've had your chance, Wayland. Any last words?" Jace stared up at him, his mouth streaming blood, his eyes stinging with sweat, and felt only a sense of total and empty exhaustion. Was this really how he was going to die?
"Wayland," he said. "You know that's not my name." "You have as much claim to it as you have to the name of Morgenstern," said Sebastian. He bent forward, leaning his weight onto the dagger. Its tip pierced Jace's skin, sending a hot stab of pain through his body. Sebastian's face was inches away, his voice a hissing whisper. "Did you really think you were Valentine's son? Did you really think a whining, pathetic thing like yourself was worthy of being a Morgenstern,
Of being my brother? He tossed his white hair back. It was lank with sweat and creek water. You're a changeling, he said. My father butchered a corpse to get you and make you one of his experiments. He tried to raise you as his own son, but you were too weak to be any good to him. You couldn't be a warrior. You were nothing, useless. So he palmed you off on the Lightwoods and hoped you might be of some use to him later, as a decoy, or as bait. He never loved you. Jace blinked his burning eyes. Then you? I am Valentine's son, Jonathan Christopher Morgenstern. You never had any right to that name. You're a ghost, a pretender. His eyes were black and glinting, like the carapaces of dead insects, and suddenly Jace heard his mother's voice, as if in a dream, but she wasn't his mother, saying, Jonathan's not a baby anymore. He isn't even human. He's a monster. You're the one, Jace choked, the one with the demon blood. Not me. That's right. The dagger slid another millimeter into Jace's flesh. Sebastian was still grinning, but it was a rictus grin like a skull's. You're the angel boy. I had to hear all about you. You with your pretty angel face and your pretty manners and your delicate, delicate feelings. You couldn't even watch a bird die without crying. No wonder Valentine was ashamed of you. No. Jace forgot the blood in his mouth, forgot the pain. You're the one he's ashamed of. You think he wouldn't take you with him to the lake because he needed to stay here and open the gate at midnight? Like he didn't know you wouldn't be able to wait. He didn't take you with him because he's ashamed to stand up in front of the angel and show him what he's done. Show him the thing he made. Show him you. Jace gazed up at Sebastian. He could feel a terrible, triumphant pity blazing in his own eyes. He knows there's nothing human in you. Maybe he loves you, but he hates you, too. Shut up! Sebastian pushed down on the dagger, twisting the hilt. Jace arced backward with a scream, and agony burst like lightning behind his eyes. I'm going to die, he thought. I'm dying. This is it. He wondered if his heart had already been pierced. He couldn't move, couldn't breathe. He knew now what it must be like for a butterfly pinned to a board. He tried to speak, tried to say a name, but nothing came out of his mouth but more blood. And yet Sebastian seemed to read his eyes. Clary, I'd almost forgotten. You're in love with her, aren't you? The shame of your nasty, incestuous impulses must nearly have killed you. Too bad you didn't know she's not really your sister. You could have spent the rest of your life with her, if only you weren't so stupid. He bent down, pushing the knife in harder, its edge scraping bone. He spoke in Jace's ear, a voice as soft as a whisper. She loved you too, he said. Keep that in mind while you die. Darkness flooded in from the edges of Jace's vision, like dye spilling onto a photograph, blotting out the image. Suddenly, there was no pain at all. He felt nothing, not even Sebastian's weight on him, as if he were floating. Sebastian's face drifted over him, white against the darkness. The dagger raised in his hand. Something bright gold glittered at Sebastian's wrist, as if he were wearing a bracelet. But it wasn't a bracelet because it was moving. Sebastian looked toward his hand, surprised as the dagger fell from his loosened grasp and struck the mud with an audible sound. Then the hand itself, separated from his wrist, thumped to the ground beside it. Jace stared wonderingly as Sebastian's severed hand bounced and came to rest against a pair of high black boots. The boots were attached to a pair of delicate legs, rising to a slender torso and a familiar face capped with a waterfall of black hair. Jace raised his eyes and saw Isabel. Her whip soaked with blood, her eyes fastened on Sebastian, who was staring at the bloody stump of his wrist with open-mouthed amazement. Isabel smiled grimly. That was for Max, you bastard. Bitch, Sebastian hissed, and sprang to his feet as Isabel's whip came slashing at him again with incredible speed. He ducked sideways and was gone. There was a rustle. He must have vanished into the trees, Jace thought, though it hurt too much to turn his head and look. Jace! Isabel knelt down over him, her stele shining in her left hand. Her eyes were bright with tears. He must seem pretty bad, Jace realized, for Isabel to look like that. Isabel, he tried to say. He wanted to tell her to go, to run, that no matter how spectacular and brave and talented she was, and she was all those things, she was no match for Sebastian. And there was no way that Sebastian was going to let a little thing like getting his hand sliced off stop him. But all that came out of Jace's mouth was a sort of gurgling noise. Don't talk. He felt the tip of her stele burn against the skin of his chest. You'll be fine. Isabel smiled down at him tremulously. You're probably wondering what the hell I'm doing here, she said. I don't know how much you know. I don't know what Sebastian's told you, but you're not Valentine's son. The arate was close to finished. Already Jace could feel the pain fading. He nodded slightly, trying to tell her, I know. Anyway, I wasn't going to come looking for you after you ran off, because you said in your note not to, and I got that. But there was no way I was going to let you die thinking you have demon blood, or without telling you that there's nothing wrong with you, though honestly, how you could have thought anything so stupid in the first place. Isabel's hand jerked, and she froze, not wanting to spoil the rune. And you needed to know that Clary's not your sister, she said more gently, because you just did. So I got Magnus to help me track you. I used that little wooden soldier you gave to Max. I don't think Magnus would have done it normally, but let's just say he was in an unusually good mood, and I may have told him Alec wanted him to do it, although that wasn't strictly true. But it'll be a while before he finds that out, and once I knew where you were, well, he'd already set up that portal, and I'm very good at sneaking. Isabel screamed. Jace tried to reach for her, but she was beyond his grasp. Being lifted, flung to the side, her whip fell from her hand. She scrambled to her knees, but Sebastian was already in front of her. His eyes blazed with rage, and there was a bloody cloth tied around the stump of his wrist. Isabel darted for her whip, but Sebastian moved faster. He spun and kicked out at her hard. His booted foot connected with her ribcage. Jace almost thought he could hear Isabel's ribs crack as she flew backward, landing awkwardly on her side. He heard her cry out. Isabel, who never cried out in pain. As Sebastian kicked her again and then caught up her whip, brandishing it in his hand. Jace rolled onto his side. The almost finished Iratze had helped, but the pain in his chest was still bad, and he knew, in a detached sort of way, that the fact that he was coughing up blood probably meant that he had a punctured lung. He wasn't sure how long that gave him. Minutes, probably. He scrabbled for the dagger where Sebastian had dropped it next to the grisly remains of his hand. Jay staggered to his feet. The smell of blood was everywhere. He thought of Magnus's vision, the world turned to blood, and his slippery hand tightened on the hilt of the dagger. He took a step forward, then another. Every step felt like he was dragging his feet through cement. Isabel was screaming curses at Sebastian, who was laughing as he brought the whip down across her body. Her screams drew Jace forward like a fish caught on a hook, but they grew fainter as he moved. The world was spinning around him like a carnival ride. One more step, Jace told himself. One more. Sebastian had his back to him. He was concentrating on Isabel. He probably thought Jace was already dead, and he nearly was. One step, he told himself. But he couldn't do it, couldn't move, couldn't bring himself to drag his feet one more step forward. Blackness was rushing in at the edges of his vision, a more profound blackness than the darkness of sleep, a blackness that would erase everything he had ever seen and bring him a rest that would be absolute, peaceful. He thought, suddenly, of Clary. Clary as he had last seen her asleep, with her hair spread across the pillow and her cheek on her hand. He had thought then that he had never seen anything so peaceful in his life. But of course she had only been sleeping, like anyone else might sleep. It hadn't been her peace that had surprised him, but his own. The peace he felt at being with her was like nothing he had ever known before. Pain jarred up his spine, and he realized with surprise that somehow, without any volition of his own, his legs had moved forward that last crucial step. Sebastian had his arm back, the whip shining in his hand. Isabel lay on the grass, a crumpled heap, no longer screaming, no longer moving at all. "You little Lightwood bitch," Sebastian was saying. "I should have smashed your face in with that hammer when I had the chance." And Jace brought his hand up with the dagger in it and sank the blade into Sebastian's back. Sebastian staggered forward, the whip falling out of his hand. He turned slowly and looked at Jace, and Jace thought, with a distant horror, that maybe Sebastian really wasn't human, that he was unkillable after all. Sebastian's face was blank, the hostility gone from it, and the dark fire from his eyes. He no longer looked like Valentine, though. He looked scared. He opened his mouth, as if he meant to say something to Jace, but his knees were already buckling. He crashed to the ground, the force of his fall sending him sliding down the incline and into the river. He came to rest on his back, his eyes staring sightlessly up at the sky. The water flowed around him, carrying dark threads of his blood downstream on the current. "He taught me there's a place on a man's back where if you sink a blade in, you can pierce his heart and sever his spine all at once," Sebastian had said. "I guess we got the same birthday present that year, big brother," Jace thought. "Didn't we?"
"Jace!"
It was Isabel, her face bloody, struggling into a sitting position.
"Jace!"
He tried to turn toward her, tried to say something, but his words were gone. He slid to his knees. A heavy weight was pressing on his shoulders, and the earth was calling him, down, down, down. He was barely aware of Isabel crying his name as the darkness carried him away. Simon was a veteran of countless battles. That is, if you counted battles engaged in while playing Dungeons and Dragons. His friend Eric was the military history buff, and he was the one who usually organized the war part of the games, which involved dozens of tiny figurines moving in straight lines across a flat landscape drawn on butcher paper. That was the way he'd always thought of battles. Or the way they were in movies, with two groups of people advancing at each other across a flat expanse of land. Straight lines in orderly progression. This was nothing like that. This was chaos, a melee of shouting and movement, and the landscape wasn't flat but a mass of mud and blood churned into a thick, unstable paste. Simon had imagined that the Night Children would walk to the battlefield and be greeted by someone in charge. He imagined he'd see the battle from a distance first and be able to watch as the two sides clashed against each other. But there was no greeting, and there were no sides. The battle loomed up out of the darkness as if he'd wandered by accident from a deserted side street into a riot in the middle of Times Square. Suddenly there were crowds surging around him, hands grabbing him, shoving him out of the way. And the vampires were scattering, diving into the battle without even a glance back for him. And there were demons. Demons everywhere. And he'd never imagined the kind of sounds they'd make, the screaming and hooting and grunting, and what was worse, the sounds of tearing and shredding and hungry satisfaction. Simon wished he could turn his vampire hearing off, but he couldn't, and the sounds were like knives piercing his eardrums. He stumbled over a body lying half in and half out of the mud, turned to see if help was needed, and saw that the shadow hunter at his feet was gone from the shoulders up. White bone gleamed against the dark earth, and despite Simon's vampire nature, he felt nauseated. "I must be the only vampire in the world sickened by the sight of blood," he thought. And then something struck him hard from behind, and he went over, skidding down a slope of mud into a pit. Simon's wasn't the only body down there. He rolled onto his back just as the demon loomed up over him. It looked like the image of death from a medieval woodcut, an animated skeleton, a bloodied hatchet clutched in one bony hand. He threw himself to the side as the blade thumped down inches from his face. The skeleton made a disappointing hissing noise and hoisted the hatchet again, and was struck from the side by a club of knotted wood. The skeleton burst apart like a piñata filled with bones. They rattled into pieces with a sound like castanets clacking before vanishing into the darkness. A shadow hunter stood over Simon. It was no one he'd ever seen before, a tall man, bearded and blood-spattered, who ran a grimy hand across his forehead as he stared down at Simon, leaving a dark streak behind.
You all right?
Stunned, Simon nodded and began scrambling to his feet.
Thanks.
The stranger leaned down, offering a hand to help Simon up. Simon accepted and went flying up out of the pit. He landed on his feet at the edge, his feet skidding on the wet mud. The stranger offered a sheepish grin.
Sorry. Downworlder strength. My partner's a werewolf. I'm not used to it.
He peered at Simon's face.
You're a vampire, aren't you? How did you know?
The man grinned. It was a tired sort of grin, but there was nothing unfriendly about it.
Your fangs. They come out when you're fighting. I know because...
He broke off.
Simon could have filled in the rest for him. I know because I've killed my fair share of vampires. Anyway, thanks for fighting with us.
Simon was about to say that he hadn't exactly fought yet or contributed anything, really. He turned to say it and got exactly one word out of his mouth before something impossibly huge and clawed and ragged-winged swept down out of the sky and dug its talons into the Shadow Hunter's back. The man didn't even cry out. His head went back as if he were looking up in surprise, wondering what had a hold of him, and then he was gone, whipping up into the empty black sky in a whir of teeth and wings. His club thumped to the ground at Simon's feet. Simon didn't move. The whole thing, from the moment he'd fallen into the pit, had taken less than a minute. He turned numbly, staring around him at the blades whirling through the darkness, at the slashing talons of demons, at the points of illumination that raced here and there through the darkness like fireflies darting through foliage. And then he realized what they were. The gleaming lights of seraph blades. He couldn't see the Lightwoods, or the Penhallows, or Luke, or anyone else he might recognize. He wasn't a Shadow Hunter. And yet that man had thanked him for fighting. What he'd told Clary was true. This was his battle, too, and he was needed here. Not human Simon, who was gentle and geeky and hated the sight of blood, but vampire Simon, a creature he barely even knew.
Real vampires know that they're dead, Raphael had said.
But Simon didn't feel dead. He'd never felt more alive. He turned as another demon loomed up in front of him. This one, a lizard thing, scaled with rodent teeth. It swept down on Simon with its back claws extended. Simon leaped. He struck the massive side of the thing and clung, his nails digging in, the scales giving way under his grip. The mark on his forehead throbbed as he sank his fangs into the demon's neck. It tasted awful. When the glass stopped falling, there was a hole in the ceiling, several feet wide, as if a meteor had crashed through it. Cold air blew in through the gap. Shivering, Clary got to her feet, brushing glass dust from her clothes. The witchlight that had lit the hall had been doused. It was gloomy inside now, thick with shadows and dust. The faint illumination of the fading portal in the square was just visible, glowing through the open front doors. It was probably no longer safe to stay in here, Clary thought. She should go to the Penhallows and join Aline. She was partway across the hall when footsteps sounded on the marble floor. Heart pounding, she turned and saw Malachi, a long, spidery shadow in the half-light, striding toward the dais. But what was he still doing here? Shouldn't he be with the rest of the Shadow Hunters on the battlefield? As he drew closer to the dais, she noticed something that made her put her hand to her mouth, stifling a cry of surprise. There was a hunched, dark shape perched on Malachi's shoulder. A bird. A raven, to be exact. Hugo. Clary ducked to crouch behind a pillar as Malachi climbed the dais steps. There was something unmistakably furtive in the way he glanced from side to side. Apparently satisfied that he was unobserved, he drew something small and glittering from his pocket and slipped it onto his finger. A ring? He reached to twist it, and Clary remembered Hodge in the library at the Institute, taking the ring from Jace's hand. The air in front of Malachi shimmered faintly, as if with heat. A voice spoke from it, a familiar voice, cool and cultured, now touched with just the faintest annoyance.
What is it, Malachi? I'm in no mood for small talk right now.
My lord, Valentine, said Malachi. His usual hostility had been replaced with a slimy obsequiousness.
Hugin visited me not a moment ago, bringing news. I assumed you had already reached the mirror, and therefore he sought me out instead. I thought you might want to know.
Valentine's tone was sharp. Very well. What news?
It's your son, Lord. Your other son. Hugin trapped him to the valley of the cave. He may even have followed you through the tunnels to the lake.
Clary clutched the pillar with whitened fingers. They were talking about Jace. Valentine grunted.
Did he meet his brother there?
Hugin says that he left the two of them fighting.
Clary felt her stomach turn over. Jace fighting Sebastian? She thought of the way Sebastian had lifted Jace at the guard and flung him, as if he weighed nothing. A wave of panic surged over her, so intense that for a moment her ears buzzed. By the time the room swam back into focus, she had missed whatever Valentine had said to Malachi in return.
It is the ones old enough to be marked, but not old enough to fight, that concerns me, Malachi was saying now. They didn't vote in the council's decision. It seems unfair to punish them in the same way that those who are fighting must be punished.
I did consider that. Valentine's voice was a bass rumble.
Because teenagers are more likely marked, it takes them longer to become forsaken. Several days, at least. I believe it may well be reversible.
Well, those of us who have drunk from the mortal cup will remain entirely unaffected?
I'm busy, Malachi, said Valentine. I've told you that you'll be safe. I am trusting my own life to this process. Have some faith.
Malachi bowed his head.
I have great faith, my lord. I have kept it for many years in silence, serving you always.
And you will be rewarded, said Valentine.
Malachi looked up. My lord.
But the air had stopped shimmering. Valentine was gone. Malachi frowned, then marched down the dais steps and toward the front doors.
Clary shrank back against the pillar, hoping desperately that he wouldn't see her. Her heart was pounding. What had all that been about? What was all this about forsaken?
The answer glimmered at the corner of her mind, but it seemed too horrible to contemplate. Even Valentine wouldn't.
Something flew at her face then, whirling and dark. She barely had time to throw her arms up to cover her eyes when something slashed along the back of her hands. She heard a fierce caw and wings beat against her upraised wrists.
Hugin, enough!
It was Malachi's sharp voice.
Hugin!
There was another caw and a thump, then silence.
Clary lowered her arms and saw the raven lying motionless at the consul's feet. Stunned or dead, she couldn't tell. With a snarl, Malachi kicked the raven savagely out of his way and strode toward Clary, glowering. He caught hold of her by a bleeding wrist and hauled her to her feet.
Stupid girl, he said. How long have you been there listening?
Long enough to know that you're one of the circle, she spat, twisting her wrist in his grasp, but he held firm. You're on Valentine's side.
There is only one side.
His voice came out in a hiss.
The Clave is foolish, misguided, pandering to half-men and monsters. All I want is to make it pure, to return it to its former glory. A goal you'd think every shadow hunter would approve of, but no. They listen to fools and demon lovers like you and Lucian Greymark. And now you've sent the flower of the Nephilim to die in this ridiculous battle. An empty gesture that will accomplish nothing.
Valentine has already begun the ritual. Soon the angel will rise and the Nephilim will become forsaken. All those save the few under Valentine's protection.
That's murder. He's murdering Shadowhunters.
Not murder, said the consul.
His voice rang with a fanatic's passion.
Cleansing. Valentine will make a new world of Shadowhunters, a world purged of weakness and corruption.
Weakness and corruption isn't in the world, Clary snapped. It's in people, and it always will be. The world just needs good people to balance it out, and you're planning to kill them all.
He looked at her for a moment with honest surprise, as if he were astonished at the force in her tone.
Fine words from a girl who would betray her own father.
Malachi jerked her toward him, yanking brutally on her bleeding wrist.
Perhaps we should see just how much Valentine would mind if I taught you.
But Clary never found out what he wanted to teach her.
A dark shape shot between them, wings outspread and claws extended. The raven caught Malachi with the tip of a talon.